Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Be Real. I'm your host, Nicole Yunus, and I am so glad to be with you today. And I cannot wait to introduce you to two of my friends. One's an old friend that I've known for a long time. One's a new friend that I just met on the podcast today. And I just absolutely loved our conversation, and I know that you will too. It's with Alisa Morgan and Aaron Eddy, who are the co-hosts of the podcast God Hears Her, and have amazing stories and full lives and leadership outside of just that podcast. So I'm super excited for our topic, which was insecurity, and we talked about what insecurity means, how it plays out in our life, why we're impacted by it, particularly as women, leaders, entrepreneurs, go-getters, and what we can do about it. And I just love what they share, especially near the end. Both of them share just a little personal technique that's worked for them that I have actually applied to my life since our recording and has been super, super helpful. So I know you guys are going to enjoy meeting them. Alisa is the former CEO of MOPS International. She's now the president Emerita. I don't know how you say that, but the Latin word for like the former president. So she's still a big influence there. She works for Our Daily Bread. She hosts Discover the Word, another podcast that is an amazing Bible study. And Aaron Eddy is the founder of So Worth Loving, which is a lifestyle brand. And I love her story that she's going to share in just a moment. So we were talking, and of course, I didn't do everything right technically. So you're kind of jumping in right after the introductions, right after we kind of got started. So we're going to jump right in with Aaron and Alisa. Enjoy. And if you like this, I want to encourage you, make sure that you're following me on Instagram or Facebook or both, because I'm doing some Let's Be Real lives as well. And I would love to have a conversation with you. So jump in, make sure you turn your notifications on so that you know when I'm going live. Okay, you guys, enjoy.
Welcome to Let's Be Real, a completely honest, entirely practical conversation about how to live our lives with freedom, purpose, and abundance. Popular author and communicator Nicole Yunus brings her 20 years of experience as a counselor, pastor, and coach to a real conversation about the tricky questions and tough decisions in life, and how to find clarity and action no matter what obstacle you may face. Have a topic to suggest or a tricky situation you need help with? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email or voice memo to nicole@nicoleyunus.com. We might feature you on the show. And now here's your host, Nicole Yunus.
When did you make the transition? Because obviously So Worth Loving was a supporting element to like this big dream that you had. At some point there was a transition. What was that like?
Yeah, great question. Yeah. You know, I think it was when I on my music blog, I had a Tumblr blog, and I
offered. Nice. Tumblr. I like, thank you for that cultural artifact for all of our, now everyone who's like that age is like, I love her, Erin. I had a Tumblr.
Oh my gosh, I had so many Tumblr accounts. It was so crazy. I made so many different ones. That was like the way that you squatted on domains, was like making a Tumblr account.
100%.
So I had a music, you know, at the Tumblr, and I put on my blog, mail me your personal t-shirt and I'll spray paint that you're worthy of love and I'll mail it back to you for free. Mm. Did that for about 8 months because I didn't have like any capital to print t-shirts. I thought, well, I'll just spray paint people's shirts. I can do that if they pay for shipping and maybe some like, you know, spray cans and stuff. So when I started doing that after 8 months, I realized this is way bigger than like a music passion project. Like this is something people want to carry. This is something people that they want to gift other people with. They want to gift their friends. They want to gift somebody that's going through a divorce or a breakup or in rehab or in depression. Like we just talked about not wanting to get out of bed, like reminding them that they're worthy of love and worth choosing. And when I started receiving stories, I thought, this is way bigger. I want to do this all the time. So when I was at my full-time job as an art director, all I could think about was how can I sustain this and tell people for the rest of my life that they're worthy of love and share people's stories to do that. So when I did that, I actually went to my accountant, told them my idea. My accountant said, over my dead body, you're going to do like t-shirts because retail is so hard. And I said, cool. And then I quit my job the same day and started it.
You're very teachable. Yeah.
Yes, very measured in your approach. I love that.
I know. It wasn't measured at all.
Now, where were you in life? Like, were you supporting yourself? What would, you know, how old were you? All that.
Yeah, I was 20. I was 24 when I started pursuing, when I was 22 when I started pursuing music. I was 21 as an art director. I like started there. I was like doing all the grunt work. I begged this organization to let me just hire me. I was like, I'll take out the trash. I'll do whatever. And for some reason they like trusted me with spreadsheets and I'm really bad at them. So I don't really know why. I like YouTubed how to use spreadsheets. So I think I was around 24, 25 when I started So Worth Loving as the blog. And, but to give you some context, I came from like an entrepreneurial family. My parents manufactured furniture for 30 something years. My grandma for 40 years. So I kind of came from the risk isn't that scary mindset.
Well, I love that. I've often thought about that. You really do like pick up these beliefs about what you can be and what you can't be from your family. So it's super interesting that you had that kind of in your blood. So here we are on the show. You, Erin, have your own company that, I mean, just the fact that it's successful enough that you get to keep doing it. Like, I know it's beyond that. It's far beyond, I'm sure, what you dreamed it would be. But just the idea that you've survived it, like, as so many people have dreams and they want to build something and they just don't, they can't do it, or it fails, or it's a struggle. You've got that going on. Alisa, you've run this massive ministry, and not only did you run it, but you did it so beautifully, so well, you grew it and you handed it off, which I actually think that it's hard to put the legacy on your leadership until it's been handed off, because that's where we see the good fruit. And so you guys are both people who I think can really help our listeners and me learn about what it feels like to actually go through the ups and downs when it appears that you've made it, you've done the hard things. And so I would love to ask you guys if you would even just define insecurity in your own words and how it's played itself out in your own life.
Well, it's maybe the opposite of what Erin's company is about, is not so worth loving, you know, it's or so worth not loving, or so worth loving not, you know, it's just basically that.
All bumper stickers that are like on the dark web that are like, you reroute from Erin's site.
to go to the core, I mean, when I was 5 years old, my dad called me into his office up onto his lap and told me that he decided he didn't love my mother anymore and he was going to divorce her and he left us. Well, ta-da, not worth loving. And, you know, I have carried that message of shame around forever and ever and ever. Now, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram, which means, you know, you give me a task and I will not only do it, I will do it better than anybody else immediately, you know, kind of a thing. So that has been my MO for conquering insecurity. But that's how I would define it at the core, is just a true core belief that I am not worth loving.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's so well said. I think we make decisions based off of how we view ourselves. And, you know, we've heard this before, our thoughts become our beliefs and our beliefs become our actions. And so I think it stems from what have we been ideating on and thinking about within ourselves and how we see ourselves. And then do we live out of that belief? And then, of course, our actions are going to, you know, reflect that.
That's true. Absolutely. That's true. And we kind of just perpetuate the whole mess when we are in unhealth that way.
Yeah.
Well, and I, Alisa, I love what you shared, because you have obviously done the work, the soul work.
A little bit of therapy.
Just a little bit.
Just a
tiny.
Yeah.
You've done some of the hard work of like finding, and this is what's so crazy about therapy as like a therapist, is you can find the root. But if all you do is find the root, that does not actually uproot the root. So it's great to know that you can pinpoint that there was actually an incident in your life or several incidents or a pattern that led you to the belief that you're so not worth loving. And then you begin to live out of that. And I think many people can relate to that, even if they haven't done the work yet. I guarantee you, you've got those. I mean, everyone's got those wounding patterns in their life. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what do we do when we actually have evidence that's made us believe that that thing is true? How do we come back from that? Like, what's been your journey? I'll start with you, Alisa, since you shared that story. What is the journey to believing that you are worth loving? Because, I mean, you can you can three your way out of it as a fellow three. I will say, as a fellow three, Alisa, you're winning this interview. You're 100% winning.
Thank you for saying that.
Every three listening is just like, I feel so good right now. Yeah, no.
Could I have a certificate to say that?
Yes. I'll be sending you an affirming ribbon later today.
Thank you.
So obviously we can work our way, but you're still just working against like a core belief. So it's never going to feel. So what is that thing that helped you?
Life. I mean, I was talking to somebody else earlier today, and you can't get there until you get there kind of a thing is you can push and push and push. But if there are these breakthrough moments where things go, a catalyst of shebang, ta-da, I get it finally. But there's just layer upon layer of experience. I can remember my dad saying things to me like, I won't be able to love you until you're not financially dependent on me. Well, bingo. So at 18, I think, okay, I got to make money. So those another crazy layer of belief. But to put it maybe more in the positive, I can remember lesson after lesson, experience after experience, when God's invited me into leading. And I just put a baby toe into the spot he was opening and just showed up. Mm-hmm. And then there would be a small response, sometimes a large mistake, sometimes a mediocre success, but you just keep layering and layering. Let me give you one example. One time I was in my early 30s and I had just started with MOPS and I was supposed to do a television interview in downtown Denver early in the morning. I didn't know the neighborhood. I mean, I didn't live down there. So I drove and I parked and I went in and I did the interview and I came back out. And when I came back out, my car was blocked by another car and I couldn't leave. So I thought, what the heck? And I looked around, the whole parking lot was full and it had been empty when I came in. So I went into this office building and I spoke to the receptionist and she just went white. And she's like, you did not park behind Mr. Brown's car, did you? And I'm like, I don't know, Mr. Brown, right? Well, turns out this guy was just this curmudgeon, old wizened lawyer who just hated anybody to park where they weren't supposed to park. And sorry, he parked behind my car and blocked me so I couldn't get out. And I went in to see him and he goes, well, I'm busy. You'll just have to talk to me at 5 o'clock today. And I'm like, dude, I've got places to go. But I went, I shrunk down. I was like 5-year-old Alisa. And I went and sat outside by the receptionist and just like swung my little feet on the chair. Like I was five with my bobby socks. Just and, I finally just dug down inside and I felt God saying, hey, Smooch, you're the CEO in here. Go in there and be a big girl. Mm. And I did. Mm. I walked back in there and I said, Mr. Brown, I'm a CEO. I need to go to work. And he was like, you can wait again. And I said, okay, dude, listen, I've apologized. I don't know what else you need, but if you either let me out by moving your car, or guess what? I'm going to call the police and tell them that you're holding me here against my will. And he crinkled his eyes and giggled and said, yes, girl. Moved his car. So it's a long answer, but that story maybe will stick. Is we all have that little 5-year-old swinging her feet on the principal's chair in his office, feeling like the bad Alisa. And sometimes we need to step up and who are we really, and be that person and see what can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the like ninja mind tricks of therapists that people are always like so surprised by is just this like inherent idea that we get stunted in that place of woundedness at that age. So it's very interesting that you told us a story about being five. And then you remember a moment where when you get into that space of insecurity, you go right back to that same. And for some of us, it's five. And for some of us, it's 13. For some of us, it's our first breakup. And we sort of regress to that age emotionally. And I think the quest to confidence is the ability to come around to those moments again and again and be like, oh, now I don't have to be five in this moment anymore. And then I'm going to get another opportunity to try again. And we put our toe out there. And I love what you said, Alisa. It really is like about experience. It's a series of experiences that begin to undo that first sort of belief or
and
that
we,
woundedness.
We grow up a little each time. We grow up a little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. Erin, how about you? What's been your experience of I mean, obviously, I just think about, I'm going back to you starting like in the music scene. I mean, is there a place that has more rejection than that? I mean, maybe trying to be a model or something, but like other than that, I can't think of something that would be harder to and have more people sort of like judging you at all, you know?
Yeah.
How did, I mean, is it just part of your nature to, do you know your Enneagram type? Are you?
Can you guess?
Are you a seven?
Yeah. I am clearly, I just dive in, adventure, free spirit, let's go, avoid pain, it's great. No, but
I'm so envious of seven. I really am like, I just want to live
no way.
I want to live in the soul of a seven for just one day.
Sometimes, until you learn that there is pain in the world, then it's just really hard to be a seven. No, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up. So when I was 7 years old, it was almost like there was a lie that was planted in me at seven, where I told myself that if I perform a certain way and people enjoy it and I keep them engaged, I'm loved, I'm good enough, I'm worth paying attention to, I'm worth listening to. And so I learned that though in such a sweet, innocent way. I had a karaoke machine. I loved Shania Twain. I would make my whole family come down to the basement. Like, I have a performance. Like, it was so sweet and genuine. Like, it was just, you know, the pure little girl, 7 year old. I'd get dressed up. I'm ready for my performance. Can't wait. My mom and dad and my sisters are going to think it's just awesome. And my sisters would roll they're 6 and 8 years older than me. So they would roll their eye and like, can't believe she's making it. Then like, oh my gosh, Aaron. And I started telling myself, if I can't keep their attention, I might not be worthy of paying attention to, which means there's something wrong with me, which means I'm defected. And I need to perform better. I need to get better at putting on a show. And so I planted that seed, and then man, it just kept being reinforced over time. So then when I got into music, I had a few music videos go viral, and I would get comments of just like, just really, really awful comments on YouTube. I mean, you know, you just get bullied because no one has consequences to what they type, you know, tearing me apart. And I just started attaching my identity to it. Mm-hmm. And I started, I didn't start attaching my identity. I had already done that. So then it just solidified things that I had thought about when I was little. And then I just got smaller and smaller, just like Elisa was saying. I just kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And then I went through a really hard season of life, and I went through a divorce, and I went through just a lot of just even just business and career failures that we've all experienced in some capacity if we've owned something or worked for a company for a long time. And when I went through that, I was really stripped of all metric of what performance would give me. I was stripped of all of it. And that's when I started learning, wow, this is where I have found my self-worth. It has been performance. It's been doing. It's been I'm only good if I'm physically doing this and this and this. It's performance driven. But it started when I was seven, and then it took an implosion of my life for me to really see and come face to face with that seven-year-old little girl.
And isn't it funny that like, it sounds like, I think if I'm following the trajectory, you would have already started spreading the message of so worth loving, maybe not, without even knowing how deeply you needed it for yourself.
Yeah. Oh yes. One of my friends said that so worth loving in some ways was was my refuge, because I so badly wanted to believe it. And I had the capacity to sit with other people's stories and remind them that they're worthy of love and listen and hear the heartbreak and just be empathetic to it. But I didn't know how to do that for myself until 5 years into owning So Worth Loving that I really learned how to lean in more to my own story.
Yeah. So how did that, work for you? How did you learn to lean into that?
Oh, you know, it was other people. It was the bravery of other people sharing their story that made me more brave to really be honest with mine. And when I went through the divorce and the shame of that, I felt support in ways, and then I also felt lack of support from some of my community, and the dependence that I had was inviting God into what I was going through, inviting Him into revealing how to truly see myself. How do I rebuild my life? I don't even know how to do that. You know, I felt, felt like I was just so reactionary.
Coach, stop it. Okay, we'll just pause for a second. Hold it right there. I'll just get to Tyler. We'll just this part out.
There you go. Okay.
We're coming back.
It's so funny. Your dog's coming in, and I had a wasp just come after me. I don't know if y'all saw that.
And then, Alicia, were you having a hot flash? You're like,
yes.
Background.
Because I usually sit with a fan on, and I can't do that. Okay.
It's cracking me up in the background. We're such a hot mess, all of us, right now. Okay. All right. So I love what you were saying, though. So I'll take you back. So you were saying, like, you were living so reactionary. So if you want to pick that up.
Yeah. I was living so reactionary to my own story, but not ever doing much deep dive work into it. So when I went through the divorce, it just brought everything that I had been pushing down and suppressing, and it just came up. You know, nothing ever suddenly happens. We just like do a slow drip, pushing things down and ignoring them and avoiding them. And that's what I did. But then when that happened, it just kind of opened up. And was like, whoa, okay, goes back to when I was 7, performance driven. Do I know what love is? Do I even know what being valuable means? Because being valuable and being worthy was performance driven for me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that I have giftings and a wiring that's special and unique that can be used and offered to help. It was other people, and it wasn't that. It was just, what can I do for you all the time, or how to make yourself feel better. So I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think I think that people can relate to the achievement side of things. Like, maybe Alisa and I both are kind of like, we'll work our way into confidence by really other people. We're doing something that other people want us to do. And then you're sort of losing. I mean, really, I feel like those words of Jesus, like, what good is it to gain the whole world and forfeit your soul, is probably our shared experience of, if you run after those things, you lose more and more of yourself. And the thing, Erin, that you said, I think it was actually in She's Got Issues, I used the analogy of like pushing a beach ball under the water. Like, the amount of energy that your capacity becomes so limited, because there's an energy that's being expended to press down hurt and to press down all of this stuff that's never been dealt with. And then you're so tired and you're so insecure and you don't know why, but it's because you're not actually at your full capacity. Yeah. That comes when we allow ourselves to begin to be healed. Not that we're ever fully there, but I feel like I can relate to that for sure. And I've seen that so often in people that I've coached or led, where I'm like, gosh, there's a lot going on under the surface, and it's really impacting what you can put out there as far as compassion, openness, grace, but you're not really connected to how much that's actually mattering. Not that everyone needs therapy, but everybody needs therapy. I mean, I don't know how else
just saying. Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it. Yeah, for sure.
I think there's another thread that I'm hearing. I think you relate to this too, is insecurity is also this feeling of, I'm not enough. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the old Stuart Smalley. I'm not smart enough, cute enough, handsome enough, you know, I'm not enough. And, you know, you see it all through the Bible, but I love some of the stories of like the disciples and Jesus going, hey, would you please feed these people? And they're like, there's 15,000 people here and I've got one fish, you know, and it's just like, I'm not enough. And time after time, I would come to a challenge where maybe at Mosque, we didn't have enough money, or we didn't have enough staff, or we certainly didn't have enough infrastructure, or, you know, on and on and on. And I would just sit there with my not enoughness. But even in my latter life, I have felt that. I remember in one of my roles now is to co-host a radio program that you've been on several times, Nicole, Discover the Word. And it's me and three guys who are very cool. Two of them are hugely brilliant, and the other one's young and so brilliant. And I love them so much. And I sit there going, you know, and I always think, I don't know the books of the Bible in order. And so many times I've been like getting ready to prepare to lead because we share the leadership. And I'm like, oh God, I'm going to screw this up. I know. And he just gently puts his hand, figuratively speaking, on my shoulder and goes, Alisa, it's called Discover the Word. Why don't you just discover it? And so you know, this inadequacy, this not enoughness that I struggle against so much, I keep watching God fill it with himself. You know, you're not enough, but I am. Just, you know, make room for me here. Let me show you how this can go here. Quit trying to, you know, to take that beach ball thing a little even different direction. Quit trying to do it all and pour your energy into do it all and relax, sweetie, and let me do it through you.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. And can I? Yes.
Yes. Everybody says, and everybody said amen. Okay.
But Erin, add on. Please.
Yes, because I have so many thoughts. Yeah. So, what you said, Nicole, about limited capacity, and then Elisa, what you said about like not believing you're enough. And I think sometimes when we have limited capacity because we've suppressed and we feel that we're not enough, I think there's also this desire for control because maybe we've been so hurt that we feel like nobody protected us. So we feel like we have to protect ourselves. But I remember when I was really at the end of myself and I was in this stonewalled self-protection mode. Don't let anybody in. I've been to this level of hurt. I'm the only one that can help me, save me, even though I had a relationship with God, but I didn't really even trust him. I didn't feel that he protected me. I read Matthew 11:28, and I love what it says about learning to live freely and lightly, inviting him in, surrendering, just letting go of the control. I think it's limited capacity because of suppressed feelings. It's feeling that we're not enough. And I think it's wanting to control that we sometimes lead our lives with and miss out on opportunities because maybe at the end of the day, we don't believe that we're worthy of love.
And I think, you know, I think we're all speaking, I was actually thinking about how we're all kind of speaking about past events. Like this is when God met us in this way, because I'm leading you guys in that way. But I think it's also important to remember, I do think this is kind of a circular experience that we go back and we'll find ourselves back there again. And as we're working through this content from this book that I wrote 10 years ago, I'm like, wow, all of this stuff is still true for me. I had I actually have a client right now who was video interviewed on the Bible study for this. And so here we are 8 years later, and she wrote to me this week and she's like, here I am still talking about insecurity, the same thing you filmed me in 8 years ago. And I'm like, you know what though? It's not because you haven't made progress. It's because we're human. And I think God's inviting us into more and more of this dependency on him, which means we keep circling around the end of ourself, whether it's because our leadership has become, we've gotten a greater set of influence that has, you know, new levels, new devils of stuff with it, or it's because we've had life circumstances and suffering that we were not prepared for or whatever. So if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, I just can't wait till I can get through this. It's more like a dance to me of this sort of invitation to allow insecurity to bring us back into the arms of the Father. To bring us back into the rhythms, like you said, freely and lightly in grace. I don't know about y'all, but when things are going well, I just kind of forget to call on the Lord. I don't know if you guys feel that sense of like, you're just like, it's all right. So you don't have that same level of connection. And so I think sometimes God uses this circular experience of, you know, the big word is sanctification, of growing into more of the image of Christ through experiences like this. So if you guys were, I want to talk a little bit about God here, sir, but like, if you could give our listeners kind of one piece of wisdom, just like a practical way, if they wake up tomorrow and they're feeling that burden of insecurity, they're just not enough, or they don't feel loved, they're feeling like they cannot step in or use their voice, what is it that you would want them to hear from each of you?
I would say, I think sometimes when we have those feelings, we feel really alone and we feel like we're the only ones that feel that way. And we almost can tend to isolate ourselves because of the shame of feeling that way. And so I would first encourage our listeners to talk to our friends and really bring everything to light. that we're wrestling with, even if we feel silly. And even I have some girlfriends where I have shared the same thing over. It's like Groundhog Day. And I, you know, there's such shame of being like, I thought she would have been over it by now. And it's like, nope, I'm not.
I do the same thing. I'm like, so sorry, girls, that you're my tribal council. It's the same thing again. Please just say the same thing back to me again. I just need to keep hearing it.
Exactly. So there's that, you know, talking to finding a close and safe person that you can just go, they're not going to see you and define you as your circumstance, but they're going to be with you in it. Mm-hmm. And then also one thing that this may sound silly, but I do this when I'm in the shower, everything happens in the shower. Aha moment. Prayers. I will literally just like hold out my hands and I will say out loud the things that I'm carrying that feel heavy. Mm-hmm. And I will just say, God, will you just take these? You don't have to be in the shower to do this, but I'll just say like, Lord, like, will you take these things? Name them and I will put them in my hands and I'll say, these are your things. I know that you don't see me this way. I know you to be true and what you say about me, that you love me, that you protect me, that you guard me. You guard the simple-hearted, the honest, the straightforward. I'm going to be real straightforward and honest with what I don't know. And this is it. And I'll just like, here it is. And it's just even that act in itself has helped me to continue to learn how to live freely and lightly. Like you said, like it is a journey. It's a circular thing. It's not something that we just get to. It's not like all of a sudden we learn to live freely and lightly. It's an everyday practice. Those are two practical tips that I would encourage. Mm.
It's a kind of surrender. Yeah. It's a kind of surrender, Erin. I love how expressing it. I think of two things, Nicole. And they're both really heavy, so oh well. But thinking of
let's be real.
Right. One is I remember reading Henry Nouwen in his book on Return of the Prodigal Son, and his words absolutely decked me. And it was just understanding that what if God's heart calls us to is not so much that we love Him, but that we let Him love us. Mm. Not so much that we know Him, but we let Him know us. Not so much that we believe Him, but that we let Him believe us. And thinking about that is so startling. It's so on your ear that I think I love God by letting Him love me. I say He is worthy by letting Him say I am worthy and believing that. Okay, so that's one thing, and that's a heavy thing by itself. But then as I've tried to practice it, here is something that has helped me. And this is in my book, The Beauty of Broken, where I talk about the breakage of my first and then my second family. After World War II in Japan, the country actually provided a ceremony where they allowed the loyal soldier to resign and retire. These, in their culture, there is such emphasis on continuing until you die that even those individuals following the war could never let go of the war and their role in it. And I think it was Louis Zamperini who shared that illustration in his book, Unforgiven. And he applied it to our relationship with God and some of others like Richard Rohr and some other people. But I began to understand that my little loyal soldier, my 5-year-old who grew up trying to take care of myself and take care of the world, I needed to let her resign. Mm-hmm. I needed to let her retire. I needed to let her curl up in a ball and just be healed. And by letting her retire, letting that achievement part of me resign, then I've been more able to let God love me because I'm not working quite as hard. I still struggle. Like we said, it's cyclical, but I'm not working quite so hard to get His approval. I'm more focusing on letting Him love me just as I am.
Mm. Oh my gosh, y'all, I was like tearing up over here. Like, I miss being with people and I'm so grateful for your wisdom. Mm. It's just like such a drink of cold water. It's so good. And that's so practical, just things that we can apply right now in this moment, tomorrow when we take a shower, remembering those ideas of, no, it's not about loving. It's like letting God love me. It's not about believing God. It's letting God believe in me. It's, you know, and this idea of holding those things out, just that posture of surrender. It's such an interesting upside down reality, isn't it? that the way to more confidence is letting go of more. I mean, it's not in holding on to more or proving more. It's actually in surrender and letting go. It really is like the headstand of leadership. It's completely upside down and freeing and joyful and free and light, like you said, Erin. So obviously you guys, I love our conversation. I cannot wait. And I'm so excited that you guys are now hosting your own podcast together. Tell us a little bit about the heart behind God Hears Her and what are some of the topics that you guys are taking on?
Yes. So, I mean, oh goodness, this was such a fun journey in recording God Hears Her. I came up to Grand Rapids, Michigan. I live, you know, in Atlanta or near Georgia. I live in Georgia. I went up to Grand Rapids, met Elisa for the first time in the lobby of our hotel, and I knew that there was an idea to do this podcast where we wanted to share real raw stories. We wanted to interview people in regards to how have they heard from God and how have they wrestled with, does God see them? Does God love them? How do they know that? And I had never met Elisa until the hotel lobby, and I fell in love with her.
Of course you did.
It was a friendship blind date. It was so precious.
It was. That's what you call it, don't you? Explain what you call it, Elisa, because I just love this explanation of our date.
It's kind of like a speed date, you know, when you have like 5 seconds to know if you're going to connect or not. And we had just been tapped to kind of try out for this. And it was like they had set us up, and it was a blind date. And we went, yep, we're friends. Yep, it works. Yep. And we went straight from having our coffee like 15 minutes later to being at the table with mics on and diving in. And the joy of it, I mean, you can tell by our voices if you don't know us, but you know, Erin is like 30 something years younger than me. And I love, Nicole, you're a little bit younger than me too. I love doing this multi-generational conversation as a background, as a context for some really meaty topics, because we do come at them, I think you can tell from our conversation here with you, we come at them from a different decade of perspective. And so I think it not only digs into the topic, but I think we also model a multi-generational friendship and relationship and what that can look like. So our Daily Bread Ministries, whom I've been with for about a decade doing Discover the Word and writing for their devotional and being in videos, and Erin's been with them for a couple of years now doing their videos and stuff too. They had the passion to really reach out to women with the knowledge that God sees you, He hears you, He loves you, He notices you because you're His. And so we come together and we are just in our We've almost finished our first season on air, although it's there. And then our second season will launch in September of 2020. And then we'll start season 3. But we do a combination of just the two of us talking about a given topic or interviewing a guest, you know, fancy people like Philip Yancey or Margaret Feinberg, and then some regular folks that you might not know on, but they're kind of subject matter expert. So it's honest, it's raw. And what I love is I think it models just discovery together.
Yeah.
God hearing us. And it meets this very need that we've been talking about for the last 100 million minutes here is, you know, insecurity. It really does.
Well, I love that. And we'll make sure we'll give you right in the show notes here on YouTube or over in the podcast. If you're listening, you can find the link in the show notes. So you can go and subscribe it, like it, rate it. I know you guys will love it. I am a fan already, and I know you will be too. So Erin, Elisa, thanks for coming over and sharing your heart and your stories. I am so full and filled up and encouraged by this. And I know that our listeners will be too. So thank you guys.
Thanks, Nicole. Love you so much.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Be Real with Nicole Yunus. We'd love to hear from you. Have a topic to suggest or a tricky situation you need help with? Send us an email or a voice memo to nicole@nicoleyunus.com and we may feature you on the show. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode.